back. It was an amazingly productive, interesting conversation. For those of you who are joining us for the first session, welcome. Really excited to have you here because part of CGI, what's so exciting and important about CGI is that it brings people together across multiple issues. And there's no issue, I think, where the intersection of different issues of human concerns, economic, social, environmental concerns come together, like climate change. And so really important to have you in the room and excited about the discussions today. I was urged to start with a joke. I got nothing. I was really busy over the break, so really sorry about that. Maybe you could work on that over the discussion table as well. Give me something for the next time. Today's session is going to build on our discussion this morning on opportunity and really explore this idea of building a groundswell for change. We know that we've seen so much exciting progress and forward momentum on these issues over the last year. We've all seen Inconvenient Truth. The producer's about you're about to meet her. And we've all talked about these issues and seen our neighbors and friends and family change in their opinions and their interests. But we know from scientists that we have so much more to do if we really want to stabilize climate in time, in all fairness to future generations. So this panel is tasked with asking the question, how do we accelerate the momentum? How do we build the groundswell for change? Students, as you know, have been at the forefront of building a movement, particularly in this country, for action on climate change. And so your ideas during the table discussions and beyond are going to be critical. We have an extraordinary set of leaders to introduce you to in a moment, all of whom can share success stories to date about actually enlarging the movement on behalf of climate action. So it's my great pleasure to introduce them to you. First, Lori David, who's an author, global warming activist, founder of the Stop Global Warming Virtual March, and also producer of An Inconvenient Truth. Exactly. Michelle Moore, the Senior Vice President for Policy and Public Affairs at the U.S. Green Building Council. Jesse Tolkien, the Executive Director of Programs at the Energy Action Coalition. Adam Werbach, founder and CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi S. And your moderator, Simran Sethi, environmental journalist who's co-host of Sundance Channel's The Green and also professional in residence at the University of Kansas School of Journalism. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, PJ. It's great to see all of you here. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks to this amazing panel that has aggregated here on the stage. It's so heartening because when I was in college and I took a class on the environment, I failed it. It was the one and only class on the environment I ever took. And it's because I couldn't understand the connection between tectonic plate shifting and any relevance it had in my life. And I think now we get it. You know, there's a tremendous sense of urgency around climate change, and each and every one of you has demonstrated in some way a commitment to really engaging in your community and really making this happen. So I thank you for being here today. And I thank all of you for being here, too. I think just to go through the panel, I think what you're going to see here is a diversity of opinion about how we get this work done, right? We all may agree that we have an urgent problem, but how do we go about affecting change? So I'd like to start off sort of talking about what can we do right here in this room? What can we take away with us? So, Lori, starting with you, you've really had an instrumental role. For those of you who haven't seen, flipping your book to Lori David's page. Lori was, of course, the producer of An Inconvenient Truth. She's an environmental woman of impact, and she's a writer, a prolific author of two books on global climate change. So thrilled to have you here. Tell me, when you start to talk about climate change in your own community, and when you start to look at sort of what we can do here today, what is one of the most heartening examples you see of change?
Okay, first of all, you said you're going to start with Adam. So right off the bat, that's why everyone's looking at me so funny. They're like, we weren't supposed to start with her.
I'm sorry.
But I'll answer your question. It's okay. Okay. I'll take the hit. It's okay. I have to point to the virtual march, which is something that I organized with Senator John McCain and Bobby Kennedy 2 years ago. Now, 2 years ago, when we started this, it had three goals, okay? The first was for everyone who signed on the internet to acknowledge, one, the globe is warming, two, that humans are causing it, and three, to demand serious, meaningful federal change. Now, that was 2 years ago. I think today we can say that we have now come to a place where, in the United States, we have acknowledged the globe is warming and that humans are causing it. So now the last piece, we have one last piece here to do, which is to get federal change. And we started with three marchers, and a couple of weeks ago we crossed 1 million marchers. And so that's a big accomplishment. And, you know, a lot has happened in the last couple of years on this issue. So that's the good news.
That's great news. And Jesse, you also are really moving the troops forward, as it were. Diva of Democracy, Executive Director of Programs at the Energy Action Coalition, Campaign Director for the Campus Climate Challenge. What are you seeing on campuses right now that is inspiring you?
What I'm seeing is that all of you in this room and young people across the country are rising to the challenge. You are demonstrating to community leaders, state leaders, and federal leaders the kind of change you want to see. You helped get, you know, more than 450 college presidents to agree to going climate neutral. You are responsible for some of the largest wind purchases in this country because you're forcing your campuses to buy wind energy. You showed up for the largest lobby day in American history on global warming when thousands of you went to Capitol Hill and you demanded strong, bold federal legislation on climate change. So you all are leading the way, but as we all know, this is the biggest challenge we've ever seen. So we need bigger, bolder solutions. And we need to not have 6,000 people show up in Washington, D.C. We need to multiply that by 10 and then by 10 again. But I am seeing young people really getting the urgency of this issue. They are making personal changes in their lives. They're making their institutions models of what they want to see across this country. And then they're getting crazy political. And I hope you all are going to get even more political as you leave today. And you bring 100 more people with you the next time that you take a personal action or when you go and vote next fall. So we're setting a high bar, and we're about to take the whole country with us.
Thank you. Another person who's been instrumental, yes, that's amazing work. And this is a history of what we've seen, the transformation we've seen from looking at, you know, divestment in South Africa, you know, back in the 80s with apartheid, and looking at the mobilization that's happened in Darfur. And this has really been a groundswell of change that has happened within colleges and universities. So the work that you're doing is not to be underestimated. Adam Warbach, who I said I was going to start with. Okay, Adam, bring it on. Adam was the youngest president of the Sierra Club, and he is a complete rabble-rouser, and he is now heading up an initiative for Saatchi & Saatchi as their CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi S.
Hey.
Hi.
Is there a question?
Welcome. Oh, gosh. See? Okay, yes, there's absolutely. Well, the question is, this is much the same that I posed to Lori and Jesse, which is, what are you seeing that's inspiring you?
Well, I guess I'm seeing a lot. I mean, I feel like we have this brilliant moment right now of energy to leverage something really big. But at the same time, I feel like we are just barely scratching the surface. And the first thing that I want all of us to do is to let go of our preciousness of what green is, what sustainability is, our knowledge of what energy, and say, this is not a movement for the elite. This is a movement for everybody on this planet. Like, how many people here use Macintoshes? Okay. That's not actually the representative number of people who use Macintoshes on the planet. How many people here shop at Walmart? Okay. So roughly 89% of Americans shop there once a year. There is a different world out there from what we actually see on college campuses, what we see in coastal towns. And that different world, not just in America, but across the planet, is what we need to start addressing with sustainability. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that instead of saying that we have a way to solve a problem, we want to say we have a dream that people can access. And our thing, I guess, that makes me really excited is watching that dream begin to take its first steps.
Thank you. Can I just add something to what Adam said? Because I totally agree with you that, you know, the thing that we have to realize is that we're all part of this problem. All of us, everyone, not just, you know, if you're an environmentalist or you're not. Everyone's an environmentalist, by the way. If we all, you know, care about snowy winters and normal summer days, or you like to a spring day, I mean, you're an environmentalist, okay? So, I mean, I think that's been a big change in the last couple of years, Adam, when we talked about this last time. You know, I think there has been a shift in consciousness with people that, okay, this is about everyone. We're all guilty. We all have a carbon footprint. We all have to be part of the solution. And I think that's a very positive change that's occurred.
Absolutely, and we are all definitely, every single one of us can do something when we walk out of here if we're not already doing it to help solve this problem. Michelle Moore is a Senior Vice President of Policy and Public Affairs for the U.S. Green Building Council. And when Adam was talking to Michelle, I thought it was really interesting thinking about you getting out of school and saying, like, I know what I don't want to do, right? You didn't want to. Michelle was hails from a small town in South Georgia that has the distinction of being the carpet tile capital of the world, LaGrange. And she said, I'm not going to go work in the carpet industry. She ended up actually doing that very thing and working for Interface Carpet, which is one of the most sustainable companies in the world now. So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about when you think back on your days and what you see today, like what is inspiring you now?
The single most inspirational thing to me about the work that we're doing is also, I believe, the single most important thing that we're doing right now, and that is USGBC is part of a broader green schools movement to help catalyze real change, because, you know, believing in the environment and accepting that there is climate change and that we need to do something about it, we're causing it, is one step, but really getting to concrete solutions that are going to have big impacts is another. And something that I think everybody in this room should definitely realize is you have tremendous power. And just as Jesse was saying, one in four people in America either go to school or go to university every day. You're 25% of the population. And if you think about it in terms of energy consumption, the number is huge as well. If every single K-12 school in America went green, we'd save $20 billion in energy costs over 10 years that could be reinvested in 2 new teachers, 200 new computers, or 5,000 new textbooks per school. Huge number. But USGBC joined last year with the Clinton Climate Initiative and several other organizations that were brought together by the American College and University President's Climate Commitment, the one that Jesse referenced earlier, where colleges and universities pledged to go climate neutral, to begin to make real, concrete changes. And the results are beginning to show. There are more than 20 universities and colleges who've signed up for the commitment, public school systems from entire states who are taking action not only to reduce the single greatest cause of climate change in the U.S., which is actually our buildings, the places we live, the places we go to school, the places we go to work, and doing it in very measurable terms. And it's also a wonderful example of the ability of an individual to create huge change and the empowerment that we all have just as people. There's a young man who I think I saw coming into the room earlier today, Nathan Wyeth, who was actually the catalyst as a student at Brown University for getting CCI engaged with the American College and University President's Climate Commitment to begin this campus movement. So that empowerment of individuals and demonstrable results coming from those changes is the thing that gives me the greatest hope and the thing, too, that connects me the most to my roots.
Thank you. Adam, I want to go back to what you were saying about sort of the percentages of people, what they believe and what they do, and are we in kind of a little green bubble right now? Because according to a Time, ABC News, Stanford University poll from last year, the large majority of Americans, about 85%, say global warming is probably happening. And then a larger percentage, 88%, you know, plus or minus, think that climate change threatens future generations. So I wonder, what do we need to do to get the other 13 to 15% on board? I'd like to start with you.
Well, I very rarely find people who don't believe in global warming unless they just want to. You know, it's like everyone wants to be happy except if you go to New York and people are just thrilled being unhappy there. So there are, and that's happiness for people who live in New York. So there are certain people who will always be skeptics. They'll always be deniers, and I don't really want to spend any other time talking about them because that. Let's just not engage their argument. And a long time ago, I stopped debating people about global warming. But I think a bigger question is trying to figure out how we can make this matter to everyday Americans. Mm-hmm. So, and the question to them is not, do you think it's real? They go, yeah. Do you think it's important? Yeah. But how important is it compared to the fact that, you know, your energy bill is going up? How important is it compared to the fact that your prescription medication is too expensive? I mean, we do a lot of work with Walmart, and I know that I don't go in there on the first of the month, the third of the month, the 15th, the 30th, the 31st, because those are the days that paychecks arrive and government assistance arrives. And on those days, everything sells. It's enormously busy. The volume in the store doubles or triples. On the rest of the days, no one has any money. I mean, people just don't have money in their bank. There's not bank accounts. People are living paycheck to paycheck in America, a huge number of people. And, you know, you watch people split their prescriptions. At Walmart, they sell $4 prescriptions, and I watch people split them into 20-day supplies, right? They take 30 days. They can't afford to spend $4 a month, so they're trying to split them up so they can make them work over 20 days. I mean, it's bad out there. And the question is, for those people, how do we make this matter to them? And it's not about telling them to care about global warming. It's about what can global warming do for them. And what it can do for them is it can lower their energy bill so that they can have some more money in their pocket. It can give them an excuse to get together with their kids and have a meal. Maybe go vegetarian one day a week and have a good meal with their family and have a chance to talk about something. It can be something that people can use to talk about with their kids. They haven't had a chance. They need something to reconnect. It can actually give answers to people they're looking for in their lives. And I have to push us to not be so precious about making them care about what we care about. Instead saying, what can we do to help you?
Excellent. And I think the we is the us. Absolutely. Absolutely.
If I can piggyback off that for a second, I agree with Adam 100%. And I got to say, I'm a little concerned right now. So a couple weeks ago, Rock the Vote came out with some numbers. First of all, young people, we are voting in record numbers. This is amazing. This is the best time to be a young person in America because people care what we think, right? And we care about global warming. We care about solutions to global warming. Although the polls say that we and the rest of Americans think it's like maybe the fifth most important issue behind a lot of other issues, behind the war in Iraq, behind economy, behind healthcare. Well, I got to tell you, I look at those three issues and I see the issue of global warming in all of those three issues, right? I see that we're fighting a war over oil right now. I see that we are in an economic downward spiral, but there's opportunity to create amazing green jobs, pathways out of poverty. I see a massive healthcare crisis, and I also see a lot of health issues related to global warming pollution. So when I see young people across this country talking about solving global warming, not even using that language, but saying, let's stop the production of coal-fired power plants. And they're going into communities where the asthma rates of young people are skyrocketing, people can't breathe, and they're talking about the right to clean air and to clean water. They're going into communities that have lost thousands of jobs, and they're saying, what can we do to revitalize this community through the creation of a green jobs program? So I got to issue a challenge really quickly to all the young people in this room. All my hopes are on your shoulders right now, and that's great because you're a powerful group of people. We got to turn up the volume on this issue in this country in this next election cycle in a significant way. We got to start a real conversation about the way that global warming impacts people. We got to talk with people about the real problems in their lives, and we got to be talking about these beautiful, bright solutions. Because Adam's right that this issue is impacting all of us, that people do care about it. We got to bring it to the people, and we got to get our leaders actually talking about really broad-scale solutions to these problems.
And I think we have to make those connections that exactly what you said. These are issues of public health and economic prosperity, and they're not separate, right? We're not separate from our ecosystem. Global climate change has no boundaries. Like, we're all in this together, whether we, you know, are driving a Prius or riding a bicycle. It doesn't matter. We all have a vested stake in this. I wonder, how do we get, and Laura, I'd really like to hear your thoughts on this. We've had conversations about this is easy. You know, there's tips for, you know, saving the planet. And I think there are small changes we can absolutely make. And then how do we kind of get people to do what Jesse's saying, which is turn it up a notch and say, this is really hard and messy and complex, and we still got to do it.
Well, first of all, this issue is not about sacrifice. It's about change, okay? And there are small things that you can do. And I really believe if you change one thing, you're very likely to change two and three things. And you're also very likely to influence your whole circle. And don't forget, each and every one of you has an entire, you know, world around you that you can influence. So you don't have to worry about, you know, changing the planet. Change your world. Change your school. Change your family. Change, you know, the businesses that you frequent. So that's one thing. I think so much of this also is about education, because I think if people knew, they would make different choices, right? So this is about choices also. And I'll just give you just a very simple example. You know, we're still cutting down virgin trees to make disposable paper products. Like, that's nuts, Okay? We should not still be doing that. If every American household bought paper napkins that were made from recycled materials, a million trees would still be standing. Okay, that is just a no-brainer. So work on that issue in your family, at your school, what the paper purchases are. And here's another simple example. And by the way, so you're not even talking about global warming. We're just talking about behavior that has to change. I mean, the whole issue has to be a giant shift in consciousness. Water bottles. I mean, I carried one on stage, and I hid it behind my chair because I was just horrified to have to carry it. But I didn't realize I would have water here. Okay, 2.5 million plastic water bottles are thrown away every hour. Plastic is made from oil. Like, this is not okay anymore, knowing what we know. We have to make changes. So it's small changes. It's changing the light bulb. If every American household changed 5 light bulbs, it would be equivalent to taking 8 million cars off the road for a year. Okay, that's worth doing. This stuff is easy. It's not sacrifice. It's change.
And it saves you money. Which, I mean, how are we paying more for water than we are for milk or gas? You know, those kinds of things are outrageous. Michelle, when we talk about these changes, how do you work with the ones that aren't so sexy or seem a little bigger? You know, because you know, as you said, buildings are a huge contributor to this issue, to this problem. How do you help people kind of get that and get on board with that?
No, it's a great point, actually, because buildings aren't terribly sexy unless they're built by a big, sexy architect. And, you know, those are ones that usually get the press. But a lot of the things that need to be done, I mean, as Lori was saying, in our homes, changing light bulbs, getting an energy audit, turning your thermostat down, not only is it not particularly sexy, it also doesn't comport, you know, with this gigantic problem that such small steps by process of accretion could make a tremendously big solution. You know, the approach that we've taken certainly is one of working to build momentum. I mean, USGBC and also me personally, my fundamental belief is that people want to do good and that they'll do it if they understand what good is. And if you have a small group of very dedicated people who begin to make changes in their own lives and talk about them with their circle of peers, be their peers CEOs of gigantic Fortune 500 companies, or be their peers people they have a beer with after work at night, that at some point you're going to get critical mass. And I started reading a book, and I probably shouldn't mention this because I'm totally not a physicist and couldn't go in depth on it, but you know, part of there's an emergent theory of chaos theory, right? Where if you get enough things pointed in the right direction or enough things pointed in the same direction, that concordance kind of brings the whole movement along with it. And in 7 years, you know, we've gone from a couple of mostly geeky architects and creative engineers thinking green buildings are a really important thing to do, to engaging many more people and feeling empowered about making a change, and people being able to feel like they were doing right by the bottom line, making the business case, as Adam said, using that energy efficiency as a way to pay for the big sexy stuff like green roofs that are a little bit more fun but maybe don't have as much CO2 emissions, to a groundswell that now is 10% of the marketplace, and a matter of sort of loving your neighbor as yourself, you know, remembering that people want to do good, and focusing on the people who want to move and not getting too upset about the 15% who don't want to come along, because when the wave hits, they'll be pushed with it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Looks like you want to say something.
Well, you know, I was struck by that. I mean, I'm also struck by the fact that, you know, we are talking about we're at the Clinton Global Initiative here, mm-hmm. and I want to make sure we point to that because, you know, for a long time, we as Americans who cared about these issues have felt a particular sense of shame looking at what our own government has been able to do on climate change. We've been the laggard in the world, and as you travel across the world, you realize that. And it's really exciting looking forward to say, hey, we're about to become a leader soon. Soon.
We have to become a
And I'll also just mention that McCain, someone was just telling me about how great McCain's climate change policy was, and I said, well, isn't McCain's climate change policy the Iraq War? Like, that seems like guaranteeing our
He's
oil.
He's also a very strong like nuclear power proponent.
So, anyway,
that's another seminar.
So we just joined Saatchi & Saatchi, which is a global advertising firm, with the idea of really pushing a consumer movement. So we're going to spread out to 84 countries across the world with the idea of getting consumers involved so that when they walk into the store, they can actually support that lifestyle they want to have in their life. It doesn't mean that they're going to buy a thing that says, hey, it's green, it's the same old thing, just packaged, but something that will actually make them healthier, make them happier, and sustain the Earth's resources. And that consumer movement is something that we need a lot of help building right now. Because I believe we should all should be consuming a lot less, but you have to understand that people are coming into the world looking to consume like we do, and they have the right to consume things. We all consume as we breathe, we eat. We're consuming, right? So with those things we buy, we need to tie that into this global step. That is the most intimate relationship that people have right now. People have a much more intimate relationship with their toilet paper than they do with their politician.
And the toilet paper should be recycled materials,
thank you,
right?
Thank you.
So our challenge is to go into those companies and change them, right? We'll reduce what we produce, we'll reduce our impact, but do not let people go, because we, most Americans and most people on the planet, view themselves as consumers, right? We need to make them civil activists and engage them in that model. But through consumption will be a way to actually do that. Now that's, you know, a lot of people don't think that's right, but I would encourage you to think about and talk to people the way that they actually express their values. When they think about it, their brand of toothpaste, their shampoo, their toilet paper, this is the way they express their values. And we need to be in that conversation.
That is a way. That is absolutely a way.
It's not the only way.
Yeah.
Like look at where the effort is being put, right? 90% is on the political realm, right, and social organizing. We have very little effort being put on our activities as consumers. And it may be distasteful to people, but who here has not bought something in the last week?
I think it's an amazing signpost that Clorox, a company that, you know, has never had green products, all of a sudden is trying to play catch-up with Method and Seventh Generation, and they've just introduced a line of green cleaning products. I mean, that's a sign of serious change.
And now they need to change the rest of their things
and
that are all like that.
We have so much work to do on the consumer, and I can't believe it. We have 4 minutes. So I know, it's outrageous. So I'm going to ask each of you to sum this up for me and to bring it back home to if we did. We're going to all come back shortly, right, and talk to each other some more. But if we weren't, what does everyone need to take home? What is happening in schools right now that people need to encourage further? And we're going to start with Jesse.
Okay, so I want to be very clear that I don't think it's enough for any person in this room just to make one personal change in their life to solve this issue. That's not enough. It's unacceptable. This is the biggest challenge of our generation. You are leaders. You are here at the Clinton Global Initiative. So you need to make changes in your own life, and then you need to go back and be a leader, and you need to change your institution, and you need to change your community, and you need to change your state too. And I'm not in your federal government, and I'm not afraid to ask that of you because I know you're capable of it. So that's the first thing. We got to build a movement. So you all came here and you committed to individual things, and that is remarkable. But how are we going to make these individual commitments connect to one another, right? We got to build a movement. We are the most diverse generation in American history. We are the most connected generation in American history. Let's use that diversity and that interconnectedness to our benefit, and let's lead this nation back to being a leader in the world like we should be. And you all should join this Google group, which is Energy Action Climate Commitments, that I set up right before this so that we can continue this conversation. And then you should do things like this. You should not only get your president to sign that commitment to go climate neutral at your campus, but you should set up a task force that's never going anywhere for the next 4, 8, 12, 16 years to make sure your campus actually gets to climate neutrality. You need a new transportation system on campus. You need to change the way your school invests its endowments to invest in sustainable companies. You need to educate everybody on your campus. And when you're done with that, you got to help us win for the climate this fall, and join us as we create a power vote in this country. And each of you, let's bring 1,000 people with us to the polls this fall. And that's it, and then we'll create a movement and we'll be on our way, okay? So let's make it happen.
From what's in the bookstore to what's in the cafeteria, everything can change. Lori?
Well, I agree with everything you said. I wasn't suggesting that everyone should just do one thing. I was saying that if you do one thing, you're likely to do two or more. So I just want to correct that. But there's another side of it, because I don't, you know, this is, knowledge is a burden. You know, this is a heavy burden on all of us, and I don't want to lose people because it's too much. I want to bring everybody in. And so I would say the opposite of what Jessie says, but I also agree with her. But I would say it's not about everyone doing everything. It's about everyone doing something, because if we all did something, we would be well on our way to solving this thing. And I just want to say one other little note, which is that scientists are the most cautious people on the planet. And they're alarmed. And that alarms me, and it should scare the hell out of you. And they're saying they can't believe the speed with which global warming is happening, how fast it's happening. So we need to hear that alarm loud and clear.
Thank you. Michelle.
I imagine, like everyone up here, I completely agree with everything Jessie said. But I also just kind of want to bring it back down to the practical. And it's not just about the top 10 things you can do to green your life, that kind of stuff. But focusing on results in the changes that you make, because in the same way that you can move markets by being an informed green consumer, or you can move governments by getting politically engaged, you can make a tremendous change to combat the actual day-to-day causes of climate change, of CO2 emissions that result from, you know, each of the actions that we take every day, from driving, from our purchases, from, you know, how much air conditioning we use, and that focusing on results and not depending on Clorox or Walmart and not depending on the federal government to make a change fast enough to save our futures would be my advice.
Thank you. Adam, we're actually in the minus now.
Adam, you could do it. 30 seconds. Go.
Pressure is too much. No. The only thing I would just ask is to say this again. Think about this as a movement for everybody. If you fall, you find yourself walking into language that's just so scientific and you're just proving how much smarter you are than the person you're talking to, you're probably wrong. Like, you have to think about this as everybody's movement, and you need to give it away and love them and be of service to them if you're actually going to do your duty for this.
Thank you. We're all going to be back together soon, but first, PJ is going to talk a little bit more about the table conversation we're going to have.
Yes, thank you very much for the insightful, intelligent, provocative ideas that you've raised. All of you, it's your turn. This is when it becomes most exciting. So many of you have experiences on your campuses of things that have worked, things that haven't worked. Lots of ideas to share and people to meet at your own tables. The question to frame the discussion for the next half an hour at your tables is, what can campus communities do to create stronger and more diverse alliances in their communities for ambitious action on climate change? And you can define communities in terms of the walls of your university or your college, the communities around the campus in which you live, or even virtual communities that you're connected to across borders. However you define community, but that's your task for the next half an hour. Look forward to seeing you in another half an hour after you're done. And if any of you have a burning question you didn't write down on a piece of paper, maybe in the next minute or so, pass it to your table facilitator. We'll collate them, and the panelists will be working on that while you're all working. Thank you.